Okay, Chevra, so let's just begin. My name is Ezra Schwartz. This is my third year teaching here in Stern College. I've been enjoying it very much, hence I'm back for a third year. One of the reasons why I enjoy it, honestly, is I find that the students are really very engaged. They take it seriously. They also, or I should say that the women here tend to ask different types of questions than my students uptown, and it forces me to think about sugyas in different ways, which is actually good for me. So that's one point. Expectations for this class are as follows. We have to learn Torah. That's basically the expectation. I try not to be particularly challenging in the grading, in the sense of I usually give you the entire test in advance. I'll give you like lots and lots and lots of questions, which will be everything that we have studied all semester, and you have the test in advance. As long as you prepare it, you'll know it. It's not about grades. It's about Talmud Torah. Anyone who's attending the shiur basically is committing to spend night seder learning Torah. That's a very significant commitment. It's something that you should be proud of just by the fact that you're committed to it. And for that alone, I think everyone deserves a good grade. But I'm a professor, officially. I have to really give exams. So that's the story. Some years we give a midterm, some years we don't give a midterm. We'll discuss that as it gets closer. And we'll move on from there. This semester, we're doing something a little different, I should say this year, which is that we're learning Sota. Sota is not a particularly popular mesechta to be learned. It's not what we call a yeshivish mesechta. Generally, in yeshivos, they study the three bavas, Bava Kam, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, and they study Yevamos, maybe. YU doesn't do Yevamos so much, but they do Ksubis and some Nedarim and Gittin and Kedushin. That's the basic yeshivish mesechtas. You have certain mesechtas that cycle in various yeshivos. For example, Sanhedrin and Avodah Zarah are done occasionally. Shabbos is done occasionally. Sota is almost never done. Now, the reason why Sota is never done is honestly because Sota has a number of rich sugyas, but they are dispersed throughout the mesechta. What we're going to try to do is conquer those sugyas through the lens of the beginning of the mesechta. I think it's doable, but it's not something that's traditionally learned in yeshivos, which adds a little bit of a challenge that there are fewer svarim available on Sota than there are on other mesechtos. There are virtually no rishonim on Sota. The major rishon that we have, I think the only Mosad Rav Kook rishon, is the Tosas Harash. That's right here. That's the only rishon with the footnotes, I should say. There is Meiri also on Sota. There's obviously Rambam. In terms of Rishonim, you don't have much else. In terms of classical Achronim on Sota, there really is not that much. It's like a strange type of thing. There is a Keren Ora that we'll be talking about a lot. The Keren Ora had a really bad job in life. He was a Litvisher Rav in the town of Karlin. Karlin was a very Hasidish community. If you've ever davened with like Karlin or Hasidim, they like scream on top of their lungs. They get really excited. The Keren Ora was, there were two brothers, the Keren Ora and the Mishkanes Yankiv, and they both were Litvisher Rabbonim in Karlin. Not a great job, but they were massive Talmidei Chachamim. The Keren Ora is the classic sefer, I'd say, on a number of underprivileged mesechtos, Harios, Sota. The Keren Ora is really very important. There is also a little bit of Be'er Sheva on Sota. Maybe we'll talk about him at some point. But there's really not that much. Now, not having much, on one hand, makes learning harder. On the other hand, it gives us opportunity to be mechadesh. It gives us opportunity to try to say ideas that other people have not said, and hopefully it will lead in the second direction. That is the general plan. So expectations are that we come, we learn. Tehila Berger, or Tehila Lipsky, I should say. I knew her since she was born. She's my niece. So she is the Shoela to Meshiva for this year. She's very dedicated. She should be helping out. If anyone has issues with Chavrusas, speak to me or speak to her. Hopefully the sources, the Makoros, will give you a good sense of what to do during Seder. Again, the main thing is to learn, and I don't know how to say this in English, but to have like geschmack in learning. The goal is to really love learning Torah. The more we love learning Torah, the more we will learn Torah. I've said this many times, Klal Yisrael needs women who are meluladot. That's the business we're in. That's what this classroom is supposed to produce. So we have a responsibility to Hashem, to Klal Yisrael, to ourselves, to try to do what we can do to grow in Torah and Yiras Shamayim. That's the goal. It was actually interesting when we went through the favorite sfarim that everyone has. I was thinking about this. No one mentioned any classical Musar sfarim, which is a divide, I'd say, between this community and other communities of learning. Gevaldik, wonderful. You like real text, like, you know, Gemara, Tanakh, Shir Mosecha Avimori, Rav Rimon, Rav Malamed, like real heavier text. That's wonderful, and we're going to try to be heavy text learning to try to really grow in Torah. So let's do the Hakdama to Sota very quickly. Our Masechta is mostly dealing with what we call a Suffolk Sota. Suffolk Sota means a woman who was warned by her husband, do not seclude yourself with a guy. And the woman goes and she secludes herself with the guy. That becomes a Suffolk Sota. The Torah tells us that there is an elaborate process in Parashas Naso, Perek Hey, and going on, there's an elaborate process by which the Suffolk Sota, we can figure out whether or not she had her affair. Again, the husband warns her, don't seclude yourself. Seclusion means that there is some concern that she's having an affair. If she secludes herself, so the only way you get out of it effectively is with drinking this, bringing a carbon, drinking the sota water that involves erasing Hashem's name. That's the basic story there in the psukim. Good? Now, there are a few things to say about sota in general and a few unusual things about sota. Point one, it seems to me that the hashgafa behind sota is that it really demonstrates what happens when a marriage goes wrong. Sometimes people think that gittin is the mesechta about a marriage going wrong. I don't think that's true. I think sota is the mesechta about a marriage going wrong. When there is a marriage, the idea of a marriage obviously is harayat mekudeshetli, as Rashi or Tosis tells us in Daf Beis in Kedushin. The word mekudeshet means miyuchedet umizumenet, that you're designated to me, only you, only me. It's a completely dedicated relationship. Sota, in the extreme form, if the woman actually had an affair, obviously this goes against the entire notion of Kedusha, the entire notion of what marriage is supposed to be. And there are processes within this Sota process that really show how much the Torah treats having an affair, how negative the Torah treats it, the fact that there is nivul, that she is disgraced and made to look disgusting, etc. Now, lest you think that Sota is only out to get the woman, the halacha is Kishem Shamayim, it's a whole parak. By Kishem Shamayim Bodkin Oso, Kachamayim Bodkin Oso. In the sense of that the husband has to be V'nikah HaIshmei Avon. Right, that's in the pasuk. What that means with Benika HaIshmei Avon is that, again, there's a machlokas Rashi in the Rambam that we'll get into, but the basic issue is that the halacha of Sota only takes effect if we are living honest, reputable, upstanding lives, both the husband and the wife. For this reason, for example, the Gemara tells us on Daf Mem Ches, later on in the Masechta, that Misha Ravo Hamana'afin Batlo Mayim Hamarim, that once there was too much zanus, there were too many affairs going on in Klal Yisrael, so they stopped the Sota procedure. Meaning, the idea of the Sota procedure is, at a time that we are acting properly, when Klal Yisrael is acting honestly, reputably, so then Sota reflects the overturning of what should be the height of Kedusha. But if it's Misha Rabu Hamanafim, if there's too much of it going on, so then we have to, Chazal felt that we have to get rid of the Mayim Hamarim, you can't have the Sota process. The Ramban tells us, Al HaTorah, I assigned this Ramban to you, that the only mitzvah in the Torah that is miraculous, supernatural, etc., is Sota. There is nothing else where the Torah speaks about miraculous and supernatural. Now, everyone and their aunt jumps up and down and spits wood and nickels and says, like, what the heck are you talking about, that the only supernatural thing is Sota? What, you never learn Parshas Tazria? Now, the answer for many people might be, yeah, Parshas Tazria is the one parasha that, like, we are least likely to learn. But there is a thing called Tzara'as, and Nigei Batim is also kind of miraculous. So, like, my dear Ramban, what are you talking about? Right? That's what everyone asks. But the answer is that the Torah never says you have to do Nigei Batim. Nigei Batim means, like, this miraculous thing happened. But Sota, the Torah tells me, I have to do this mitzvah of Hashgah Sota. Remember, the Torah says, V'tzavsa bitna v'nafla yerecha, that if she's, in fact, not innocent, so that will all happen. Tzavsa bitna v'nafla yerecha, right? It's not going to be good. The Torah says that if she's innocent, right, v'niksa v'nizra zara, there's a havtocha that she will have children. If she was yoledes bitzar, she'll be yoledes shalom bitzar. Right, Sota is a completely miraculous process, and the idea that the Torah is getting at, I think, is something about what hashras hashchina should be in a good marriage, and consequently, when the marriage goes awry, what can happen in turn. I think that is part of the idea of Sota. Okay, now, was that Hakdama 1? Next. I mean, that wasn't, was that Hakdama 1? That was Hakdama number 1. Hakdama number 2 is, there are processes within the din of Sota. Actually, it's called like this. There are processes within the din of Sota, which we call Kinui and Stira. Okay, what is Kinui? What does the word Kinui mean?
Like jealous.
Jealous. Okay, so the word Kina usually means jealous. But how do we translate the word Kinui over here in the Pasuk? Remember, the Torah writes, V'avar alav ruach kina v'kinei es ishto.
Warning.
Right? So kinui is translated as hasara'a, as some sort of warning. The husband tells his wife, out history imish ploni. Don't seclude yourself with this guy. That is called kinui. By the way, the Minchas Chinuch discusses that you can't do kinui to everybody. You can't even do kinui to a lot of people. Out history imish ploni. No? You say, right, Al Tadabri and Ish Ploni, that's why the Mishnah says, don't speak with this guy, but it's Ish Ploni, it's this guy. If it's too general, so that is not called Kinoi. Now, Kinoi as Hasra'a is clearly the meaning of the end of the Pasuk, when the Torah writes, V'kinei is Ishto. However, V'avar alav ruach kin'ah, V'kinei is Ishto. What is ruach kin'ah? How would we type? How would we translate the word ruach kin'ah?
Jealousy.
Presumably, ruach kin'ah, the word kin'ah means something different than the word v'kineh. which is kind of unusual, but you can't say he has a spirit of warning. And this leads some of the Mefarshim al-HaTorah to say, and we'll talk about this more probably next time we learn, that kinui can be a number of different things. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kel Kana. What does Kel Kana mean?
Jealous,
vengeful, right? Almost angry, no? That's Kel Kana. Vayekane Hashem la'artzo. Hashem is worried that Eretz Yisrael is being taken over in bad ways, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes like protective of the land, no? The Netziv has in the Hamekdavar that the word kinui in Tanakh means different things. Like Kanei Hashem la'artzo basically means that it's protective. Kinui could also mean jealous, vengeful. Sometimes a husband can do kinui to his wife and the motives are very pure. Right? The husband is protective of his wife. Not protective in the sense that, like, never leave the house or keep you under lock and key, but protective in the sense that he's genuinely worried that she is doing something wrong. That is an okay type of kinui. But there are other kinuis which are very negative. Now the husband is jealous of his wife. He's angry at her. And he does kinui for those reasons. So that type of kinui is obviously less positive. If you look in the Perush of the Hamekdavar of the Netziv, so the Netziv speaks about the word kinui and how it has a dual meaning. So the husband goes through kinui. Are edim necessary for kinui?
Yes.
Who says so? The Mishnah. Which Tana? What? Both. Everybody. Everyone in our Mishnah says that you need Edim for Kinoi. Stira. What is Stira, by the way?
But she actually is.
What? She's in private. Stira, we have a normal word that we use for Stira. We call it Yichud. The standard, by the way, and the dinim of Yichud come up over here in Meseches Sota. So the husband warns his wife, don't seclude yourself. And then she has Stira, then she secludes herself. Does Stira need Edim? What? Machlokes. Good. Right? In other words, that Rabbi Eliezer, the Tana, says, you don't need Edim. The Tana Rabbi Yehoshua says, you do need Edim for Stira. Now, there is going to be a third Tana that we'll encounter in the Gemara Beis Amnav, going over to Beis Amnav Beis, which is the Tana of Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that you do not need Edim for Kinui. But what we have so far is everyone holds Kinui needs Edim. There's a machlokes as to whether Stira requires Edim. Now, there are two types of Edim in Judaism. Two types of Edim. There's Edim l'kiyum hadavar, and there's Edim l'birur hadavar. Does anyone want to explain to me what these terms mean?
Wait, what's the first?
L'kiyum hadavar. At some point you'll get used to my handwriting. Right, so it's Edim l'kiyum hadavar, and there's Edim l'birur hadavar. What's the normal understanding of Edim? Why do you need witnesses?
That something happened, it's not being done.
Louder?
To prove something happened.
To prove something happened. In other words, it did happen halachically, but I can't prove it. Right? That is what we call birur hadavar. But there's another type of edus that's called edus l'kiyum hadavar, which is that as a matter of halacha, the action didn't happen unless there are edim. No? Let me give you examples. These have been Again, I'm not saying this la halacha. I'm just saying that there's a lot of discussion about this. Sometimes in difficult aguna cases, so one of the ways that Rabbonim try to solve the situation is they look back at the videotape. You know, like instant replay in football or something, or the equivalent. So they look back at the videotape and they look at the wedding ceremony and they see, was there anything wrong in the wedding ceremony? So let's say you have a husband and he puts the ring on the kala's finger. Well, he's not yet husband, puts the ring on the, right, not yet wife's finger, and he says, Hareyat Mekudeshesli, we got the whole thing on tape. We know what happened. But there are no witnesses there. Are they married? Dun 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 da 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 bum bum bum.
No one's at the wedding at all.
What?
Mm-hmm.
So there are no. So one approach could be, one possible scenario is there are no witnesses at the wedding at all, in that the only, let's say, Orthodox Jew, we're assuming that to be kosher le'edus, you have to be an Orthodox Jewish male above the age of 13. Okay? That's an assumption that we're making. That's what it takes to be kosher le'edus. The only Orthodox Jewish male at the wedding is, I don't know, the father of the chassan, right? Pasul Eidos, because he's related. Or the rabbi's only kosher aid, or something, right? There is no Eidim at the wedding. That's one possibility. Another possibility, which is a little more questionable, la halacha, is that usually when we do Eidos by Kedushin, the Mesadra Kedushin will ask the chassan, and some Mesadra Kedushin refer to in the presence of both the chassan and the kala, please designate that these are the witnesses. Let's say they didn't do that. So, what happens, Temi?
Well, then you could say that everyone was a witness and everyone was a witness.
So, maybe you could say everyone was the witness, but if I designate the witnesses...
No, they didn't designate the witness.
Yeah.
Then everyone would be a witness, and then if one of them was puzzled, then you could say that the whole wedding isn't actually...
Correct.
Which is why you designate two witnesses.
So, you know, you're saying that we designate witnesses dafka to solve an aguna issue potentially later on.
We don't. Well,
not exactly.
No. If you didn't designate witnesses, then you could say then that might solve the issue.
If you didn't designate witnesses, that might solve the issue.
Because then you're saying there was probably somebody in the audience.
Right, so the Gemara in Makis and Daf Hei has a rule of Nimsa Echamein Karva Paso Edus Kulon Betela, and the Ritva over there writes, maybe Tosis has this, that there's an element of being Miyachet Edim, because if you're not Miyachet Edim, you have certain Pasal Edim in the group, and therefore the entire kat, the entire set of Edim becomes invalid based on the presence of this one Pasal Aid. So by being miyachid eidim, what we're doing is we're solving that problem. Yeah, it happens that it's a little difficult lahalacha because most poskim don't assume that you really need yichid eidim. Most poskim assume that eidei re'iya, we don't apply the rule of nimsa echad karev opaso eidos kolon b'teila. The rule that if one of the eidim is not kosher, the entire kat is invalidated, that's only true in eid hameyid, if the eid comes to bezin to testify. But if the eid just saw, so then we don't invalidate because of nimsa echa karvo pasol. But again, that gets involved in that whole sugya. But what are we getting at over here? We're getting at an idea that's called eidos l'kiyum hadavar, no? If I know that the wedding took place, I have a videotape, I know that there was Kedushin, but the Kedushin was not witnessed by two Edim, or even if it was witnessed by two Edim, the Gemara in Kedushin on Mem Gimel speaks about Hichmin Edim Achori HaGeder. Let's say I have witnesses and they're hidden. So in that case, that is not kosher eidos for kedushin. Kedushin requires what we call eidos l'kiyum hadavar, meaning it didn't happen if the eidim are not present. Not only do the eidim have to be present, but you have to know, or the chassan and kala have to know about the presence of the eidim. That's the din. So now, question. Eidos by Sota. Now, Eidos by Sota comes in different forms. I have Eide Kingly. Right? I could have witnesses for the Kingly, or what we saw in the Mishnah is that everybody holds that you need Eide Kingly. Right? No one disagreed in our Mishnah. There's Eide Stira. Right, there are the witnesses who say that Yichud happened. And once it's Eide Kinni and Eide Stira, then the woman becomes what's called a Suffolk Sota. That's what our Mishnah is talking about. And then there's also the Din of Tumah. Let's say you have witnesses that they actually had an affair. Tumah, we pass in Eid Echad suffices for Tumah. Rashi has the Sal HaTorah and those psukim that we assigned. Usually, B'chol HaTorah Kula, you need two witnesses, but in order to say that the woman actually had an affair, and consequently the Sota water will not be effective, we don't give her any Sota water to drink, in order for that to happen, even a single aid, right? Aid Echad is Neman by Sota. That is something that the Gemara and Daf Beis will develop. So we have Eide Kinoi, Eide Stira. Let's assume according to Rabbi Yeshua that you need Eide Kinoi and Eide Stira. And Eide Echad is Neman for Tuma. Now, what's the nature of the Eidim though? Back to our question. Are the Eidim, Eidim Mekiyum Hadavar? Or are the Eidim Mebira Hadavar? Let's say the woman admits. She said, yeah, I really was secluded. The guy, right, they admit. They admit it. They say, yeah, we were secluded. So, can we trigger the Sota rules based on their admission? Or do I say, no. In the absence of Eidim, there are no Sota rules. And we could ask this question about Eide Kinoi also. The husband warns his wife, don't seclude yourself. And then, right? And there are no Eidim there. But they both admit that a warning happened. If the Eidos is Eidos Lekiyum Hadavar, so then a warning absent Eidim doesn't have the halachic effect of a warning. But if it's Eidos Lebirur Hadavar, and they both admit that there was a warning, so then it would have halachic effect. So there is a question whether the Eidos by Kinoi and Stira, is it Eidos Lekiyum Hadavar or Eidos Lebirur Hadavar? Got it, Chevra? Hello, Elisheva, how are you?
Like, you know, it seems that it's like Eidim Kiyomadavar according to Rashi, because he says, like, if they don't,
oh,
there are no witnesses.
Okay, so show us the line in Rashi that you're being medayik from. Nachon. Right? In other words, Rashi writes, right? Again, in my Rashi, it's like in the first skinny line. If the kinoi did not happen b'fnei shnayim, then she does not become asura. Eino ne'eseres alav b'stirasa ve'eino mashke, and there is no hashka'ah. She's not asura at all unless there are two eidim. Two eidim is a necessary component for her to become asura. You get the impression from Rashi that it's eidos l'kiyum hadavar. It's not 1,000,000% clear, though, that this is what Rashi means, because Elisheva started in the middle of Rashi. No? You cheated. You started in the middle of Rashi. Okay? Can someone be medayik from the beginning of Rashi? Dun, dun, dun. So the beginning of Rashi says, Im bala hashkosa, tzarech lahavi shnei edim. Right? If you want to be mashke, then you need two edim that you warned her. You get the impression that, let's say, you don't want her to drink, you just want her to be asura. So even without two edim, she can be asura and the husband, no? From the end of Rashi, you get the impression that this is edus l'kiyum hadavar, that ede kinuy or edus l'kiyum hadavar. But from the beginning of Rashi, you get the impression, perhaps, I think the diuk from the end of Rashi is a stronger diuk than the diuk from the beginning of Rashi, but the beginning of Rashi perhaps would lead in the direction that the edus is edus l'birer hadavar only. So the story goes as follows. If you look in on the Sefer Nefesh Harav, by the way, it's Nefesh Harav, not Nefesh Herb. It's about Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Schechter. Basically, within the first year that the Rav was Nifter, Rav Schechter wrote Torah from Rav Soloveitchik to memorialize the Rav. And it's amazing how much he was able to put out just in that one year. It's like a lot of the Rav's Torah, a lot of anecdotes from the Rav, like some really nice things. So one of the stories that goes, that he quotes over there, it's on page, I think, Reish Samach Hei, Reish Samach Vav, in the Nefesh HaRav. Did Tehila give this on her source sheets?
Yeah.
Okay, so who read the story? Anyone? Eliana, you read it?
And then the Sadiq didn't like him and told her like, don't let the Sadiq to the house. And then like she broke back, so she let him and like gave him like stuff to drink. And then the question was, then she, like, was that considered like
hatra
that he did, and
then
would that be
like stira? And then, like, is that considered kinui and then stira? And then she's asura on her husband, because in our world we don't have soda water anymore. Right? So apparently this story happened with some gadol, that the gadol, basically there's a mashulach in town, and he doesn't want to give this mashulach money, and he says, don't let this guy in, and the wife lets the guy in, and the question is whether she's asura on her husband now, because there was kinui and stira. But that's something you think about, that's like a frightening type of question. Because, like, if a husband warns his wife, don't let somebody in, and the guy goes in, so now she's asura on the husband forever. Wow! That's, like, really scary. So the Beis HaLevi has tshuvos about this. In Chelek Beis Simin Mem Aleph and Simin Mem Beis, the Beis HaLevi elaborates on this question. And the first part of the Beis HaLevi fleshes out this idea that is the edus l'kiyum hadavar or edus Lebirer hadavar. If the edus is edus lekiyum hadavar, so because there were no edim, so therefore there was no halachic kinoi. Even though he admits and she admits that, right, no one is denying that the husband said, don't let this mashulach into the house, nonetheless she's asura. If you hold that's edus lebirer hadavar. If it's edus lekiyum hadavar, she's going to be muteris. Now, this is all the beginning of the Beis HaLevi. If you look in that Beis HaLevi, again, there are two simonim, Mem Aleph and Mem Beis. You should try to look at this actually during Seder tomorrow. In Simon Mem Beis, Ostalad, it's like at the end of Simon Mem Beis. So the Beis HaLevi over there says that he thinks the whole issue is Kimanda Lessa. The whole issue doesn't really matter, because kinui doesn't just mean that a husband warns his wife not to seclude herself, but it means that that the husband is worried that his wife is having an affair, and that's why, right? In this case, the husband says, don't let the guy into the house. Why not? The husband is not suspicious that the wife is having an affair. Rather, the husband doesn't want to give money to this mashulach. Right? This is, not giving money is a very different type of issue. The dinim of kinui, the Beis HaLevi develops, is the Beis HaLevi develops the idea that kinui is only when there is suspicion that there was an affair. But if you don't want to say that, then you really only have a heter if you hold that the edus of kinoi is edus l'kiyum hadavar. In the absence of edim, it's like the kinoi never happened. What about stira? There's a machlekes hatanoi in our Mishnah. Rebbe Eliezer says you don't need edim for stira. No, the Tanya Rebbe Yehoshua says you do need edim for stira. According to the Tanya Rebbe Yehoshua, that you do need edim for stira is the edim edus l'kiyum hadavar or edus l'birur hadavar. According to the Tanya Rabbi Yehoshua. By the way, and Rashi Al HaTorah tells me that I paskin like the Tanya Rabbi Yehoshua, no? Doesn't Rashi there, and I give you, I think, Pesukim Yud Beis Yud Gimel Yud Dal, I think Rashi in Pesuk Yud Gimel writes a nusach that sounds something like I paskin like Rabbi Yehoshua, not like Rabbi Eliezer. It's clear from Rashi that Stira requires two Edim. But are the two Edim Lebirur HaDavar? In other words, if you know what happened without the Edim, you could dispense with the Edim? Or do I assume that in order for it to become Asura, that you need two Edim by the Stira, it's Edus L'Kiyum HaDavar? What would anyone want to say with this? Here's a Tosas Reb Kiva Eger that I gave you on the Mishnayis, who addresses it. But you could probably figure it out even without the Tosas Rebbe Kiva Eger, just by reading the Rashi. Atara?
I was
going to
say maybe based on the second half of the Mishnah.
Yeah?
Where she asked me how to
the Can I just ask people to speak louder? Over the summer, I got hearing aids, but I still don't know how to use them well. So, I mean, this is like, I didn't think I'd be at this stage of life so soon, but I can't hear anything. Yeah.
I was going to suggest that maybe based on the second half of the Mishnah, where it just says, Nechmasai no Lubeda Setzer, that she becomes a Surah, and it doesn't mention the requirement of Edim. So that maybe it's just Edim Lubeda Setzer.
Again, what's your implication from the Mishnah?
That it just says, Nechmasai no Lubeda Setzer, and she becomes a Bishatai no Lubeda and it doesn't there require
Edim. Right, and the Mishnah at the end doesn't speak about Edim at all, but it's clear from the beginning of the Mishnah, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, whether you need mashke al pishnayim. The word mashke means stira, right? So according to Rabbi Eliezer, Mashkal pi Eirechad al pi Atzer, Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, Mashkal pi Shnayim. I want to know within Rabbi Yehoshua that you need Edim. You're right, the end of the Mishnah doesn't say that there are Edim, but the end of the Mishnah is probably not working within Rabbi Yehoshua. Right? Sophia?
But the Tosfot or Rashi, Rabbi Yehoshua, Merfis,
Kadalei, it's saying
that, like,
what's it? Never mind. The Tosfot that what?
Never
mind. Okay. So look at the Rashi, Umashke al pi Eirechad o al pi Atzmo. Right? Again, this Rashi is speaking within the Tana Rabbi Eliezer. By the way, the reason why we wouldn't paskin like the Tana Rabbi Eliezer is the Gemara tells us in Nida Daf Yud Gimel that Rabbi Eliezer is Shamutihu, no? We don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer usually, either because he was put into Cherem, or as Tosfos writes there in Nida Daf Yud Gimel, Shamuti means he's a Talmud of Beis Shammai, and therefore we don't paskin like him. But let's look at this Rashi. Mashkal pi Eirechad al pi Atzmo. Zok Rashi. Afilu ein edim shenistera, ela Eirechad, o hu Atzmo omer ri'isiha shenistera acher shekinesi la, neseres bestira, ad shetishte. Even if you have only one aid, or the guy himself says, right, I know, I saw that she had stira, so then she becomes asura. Meaning, according to Rabbi Eliezer, she's Asura, when the guy says, I saw my wife have stira. But according to the Tana, Rabbi Yehoshua, she's not Asura. No? Isn't that Meduyak and Rashi? The Tana, Rabbi Eliezer, says she's Asura when the husband admits. When the husband says, I saw her. She's not denying it. You don't see that she's denying anything. There's just no edim. According to Rabbi Eliezer, she's Asura. But according to Rabbi Yehoshua, she's not Asura. Because there's no two edim. Meaning that Rabbi Yehoshua requires two edim for a stira, even if they both admit that the stira happened. This is Reb Kiva Eger's diyuk in Rashi. Reb Kiva Eger says that nowhere in Rashi do we see that there's any denial of the stira, or any denial of what we would call the yichud. You don't see it anywhere. And even so, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, she's not Asura because there are no two edim. You get an impression that the two edim is edus l'kiyum hadavar, at least according to Rashi. Does anyone have a Rambam here? The advantage of the GPATS room is that we always had Svarim. Anyone have a Rambam? Do any of you have like a fancy Gemara that like flies and has like all the Rambams in the back or anything? Okay, so if you don't have such a Gemara, so you have to trust me on this one. So the Rambam writes in Perek Aleph of Sota Halacha Ches. By the way, the Rambam spells the word Sota with a sin, no? Our Masechta spells Sota with a Samach. If you look in Rashi Al Hatayra, there are two different translations of the word Kitiste Ishto, no? One explanation that Rashi gives is Ein Adam Chote Elon Kein Nipnasa Bo Ruach Shtus. That Sota would be more like with a sin, right? Shtus, or Stus, or whatever it is, right? And the other explanation of Rashi is Sota Min Haderech, like she went astray. Sota with a sin sounds much more like Ruach Shtus. Sota with a Samach sounds much more like just going astray, no? Again, there is some Musar lesson in terms of how we conceptualize our sins, whether we were just like Meshuga at that moment, or whether sometimes we're deciding consciously to go astray. And obviously there are different types of sins, but those seems to be the two explanations. That seems to be the two explanations in Rashi. But Zolzain, whatever it is, Rashi over here is saying that according to the Tana, Rabbi Yehoshua, she is not Asura, even though they both admit that there was Stira. But the Rambam writes in Perek Aleph Sota Halacha Ches, the Rambam writes, let's say there's Edus Vekiyum, and then they admit that there was Stira, says the Rambam, the Dinim of Sota are triggered. You get an impression from that Rambam, Perek Aleph Halacha Ches, that he's saying that the Edus of Stira, according to Rabbi Yehoshua, is Edus L'Birur Hadavar. Again, we'll have to discuss this and elaborate on this more as this man goes on, but for the time being, this is just like to highlight that Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, based on our understanding of the difference in Edus L'Kiyum Hadavar and Edus Edus L'Birur Hadavar. Let's just talk about Zingle.
Quick clarification.
Ms. Chats, I'm sorry.
Yes. Why does Rambam think that it's Birur Hadavar? I'm just having to
look. No, so the Rambam is saying that if there was Kinui, and then they admit that there was Yichud / Stira, so then she's Asura and her husband. According to Rabbi Yehoshua, as understood by Rashi, she's not Asura and the husband. Unless there are two witnesses present that there was Yichud, she's not Asura and the husband, according to Rashi. Right? So that's a big machlokas, Rashi and Rambam, which will be relevant for lots of other parts in Judaism. Okay. What are some of the halachos of suffix sota? Remember, a suffix sota is what we're talking about most of the time. Suffix sota is that there is kinoi and stira. She's called a suffix rather than a vadai because you don't know she had an affair, right? Not every time, we'll be done in 1 minute, don't worry. Not every time that you have yichud do you actually have bia, correct? It doesn't work like that. So, there are dinim, suffix, so it is kinoi and stira. So, what are the halachos that take effect with the suffix, so what does our Mishnah say? Let's go, quickly. Chick-chack, boom. Anyone? A suffix, so is asura labal. Right? She's asura labal. She's asura leboel. What else? The Baal is the husband. The Boa, what's the fancy English word? Pramador or something? All right, someone has to look this up. There's some word, and that's the Boel. Right? She's Asura to the Baal, she's Asura to Boel. She's Asura Bitruma. What else? That's is Chalitza Nat Yibum. And there's also another din that makes a Tamishna on Chavches that she loses her ksuba. Right? When you get married, the husband obligates himself to give a ksuba to his wife. In the event that the husband is responsible for the disintegration of the marriage, she pays for the ksuba. In the event that the wife is responsible for the disintegration of the marriage, so then she doesn't collect ksuba. So the din of a suffix sota is she's asur lebal, leboel, letruma, she gets chalitza not yibum, and she loses her ksuba. Those are all the dinim that are found in the Mishnah. One of these dinim, of course, does not make it to our Mishnah, right? Which is the din of... The Tosis HaRosh raises this question. That if the Mishnah writes, Omer, oh, it should be Omer, not Omer, throughout the Mishnah, there's like, you're not supposed to do this. We'll discuss that later on. Right? So the Mishnah says, Omer lo b'fnei shnayim, al tidabrim ishploni, v'dibra imo, adayin him mutasa beso, mutasa echo, b'truma. Why doesn't the Mishnah say she's mutaris la boel?
Because she's still
Ashish. She's still Ashish. That's what Taisa Rosh answers. She's a married woman, so you can't say she's mutaris la boel. Right? So basically, a suffix sota is asura labal. One of the funny dinim that we'll talk about later on, and we're going to have to break now, I guess, but one of the funny dinim about sota is that once this woman is a suffix sota, if the husband sleeps with her, the husband gets malchus. Now, usually you don't get malchus on the suffix, no? This woman, we don't know she had an affair. There was kina and there's stira. That doesn't mean she had an affair. Right? So the husband's not supposed to sleep with her. Got it. But if he does sleep with her, what happens? Dav chavches, there's malchus. That is the din of asa'a hakas of suffik kevadai. Usually you don't get malchus for a suffik. Over here you do. That is another unusual aspect of sota. And based on the hakdama that we gave about how sota represents the disintegration of the marriage, you should be able to think of the hashkafa behind the din of asah kas of safek kevadai, but we will discuss that next time we learn Bezras Hashem. Okay, ladies?